Hello. Yes, you've joined us again. It's episode 3. Thank you to everyone who's subscribed on iTunes and has been giving us feedback via Facebook and TeetTugger at Twitter. This episode we discuss reboots. Yes, things from your childhood that they're remaking and how we hate them so. We also discuss the phenomenon that is Minecraft. And a little later in the show we get into a rather rambling debate about the top 5 wrestling matches of all time. This week, Boo Lamont presents his. Next week, I present mine. I'm sure mine will be superior, but let's wait and see. Don't forget, give us your feedback on Facebook. Tell us what you think of the show. Tell us what you want us to discuss. Throw some ideas at us, and we'll be more than happy to have a good old chinwag and a chit-chat. Meanwhile, enjoy the show. I've got the feeling. Welcome to the Milking It podcast, the podcast that tucks that teat of popular culture till it explodes all over your face. I'm David Davis.
And I'm Boo Lamont.
Welcome to episode 3. Can you imagine episode 3?
It's a trilogy, Dave. It's a trilogy.
It certainly is. The Clone Wars, if you will. Or was that episode 2? I can't remember.
Attack of the Clones, the Revenge of the Sith. Yes.
The Revenge of the Sith, if you will. So here we are. We're once again recording. It's a beautiful Saturday night. And instead of being out there fighting, as Elton John said it was all right to do, so we had permission. Try to release that. We are here, sat in our spare rooms, or should I say the spare rooms of our dearest and dearest, because that's the situation we find ourselves in. But we're here again to talk all things geek.
It's been an exciting week in the world of video games, geekdom, superhero news and comic books all around. So we've got plenty to talk about. And of course, a couple of trailers out this week that were very interesting.
So one of the things that caught my eye tonight was one of the most shared news articles online is about Minecraft and how they're saying that it's more than just another video game, discussing the idea that this blocky pixel fest now got over 33 million users and has easily become an obsession. Boo, your thoughts on Minecraft?
Dave, I have played Minecraft.
Yeah.
I spent a couple of hours on it when it was originally out on the Xbox. They released the demo, and I was really looking forward to it. And I got stuck in, and I dug a hole into the ground, looked around a bit, made some wood.
That sounds like most of my evenings, yes.
So it was another crazy weekend at the Lamont household. I was desperate to like it because it was so popular with everybody. But I just couldn't get into it, and I know I'm going to get a lot of hate, and I know so many people that love it. They've got the toy pickaxes and they've got the green zombie men, and it's a cool thing. I can see it's a cool thing, but it's just a cool thing I can't get into at all. It's just not my cup of tea.
It's one of those news stories that you read and it makes me feel older than I am. All right, yes, I'm a 33-year-old guy who wears Superman socks while he's walking to work, but I look at Minecraft and I really don't understand the appeal to it. To me, I have played so many great looking games with a great story and everything about it that why would I want to go back to playing something that looks like it was on a C64 or an Amiga?
No, I don't think it's the graphics, Dave. The actual game appeals. Like, it's basically just a video game version of Lego where you have to make the bricks. That's kind of how I went in, because the main draw is obviously you build like massive things that look like things in real life. As in, I've seen like someone recreate Hogwarts, the ship from Mass Effect, buildings from Gotham City, loads of kind of really cool geek stuff. But I just couldn't get into it, and it's such a shame because it's a phenomenon. I mean, it's been people have been on there now for what is it? Came out, we're looking at 2009, 2010, and Just everyone loved it so much. And, you know, I like to get into the same thing as everyone else. It's like Call of Duty. Like, at first, I loved Call of Duty, but as the years wore on, the game got more and more, in my opinion, boring, but people kept playing it. So, but, I mean, there's a big community for Minecraft. it's hugely popular, and it's, I think it's the best-selling Xbox Live game of all time. Something like I believe.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, completely.
And it shattered every previous record, I'm being told. Specifically, it came out more expensive as well. So good for Notch, the creator. But my favorite thing about Minecraft so far has been the notched pickaxe in Skyrim. I get the reference, and thanks for the pickaxe.
Yes, very good. No, completely. I'm looking at it. Maybe I don't have the patience, and I'm a little bit ADHD in terms of I can't spend too long working on something like that without results coming up straight away. So I think that probably gets in the way in terms of what I'd like to try and do in Minecraft. For me, I see these magical, wonderful worlds that people have created. I've watched a few videos on YouTube of like some of the guys had recreated like the WrestleMania arena and all that kind of stuff, and you can walk around and go up the stairs and there's escalators and everything else. And I just think I know that that must have taken far more time than I would ever want to spend playing a video game.
Now I know that there are in-game achievements.
What?
I'll be back later.
I'm just off to buy a game.
I don't think that there's an achievement in Minecraft that would keep me building months on end just so that I can make a recreation of Harry Potter's bedroom.
Unless my Xbox gave me a blowjob. No, there is nothing in this world, my friend.
They can do that now? I might have to retract my statement about PlayStation.
When they say connect, they mean it connects.
With a K, baby.
Hello, if you can hear me, then I'm probably dead. My name's Jay Hodgkin, and I'm trapped in an arcade called the Sticky Floor Fun Emporium. A dungeon of mystery.
On last week's Sticky Floor, I mentioned Primal Rage, and I fancied reviewing it, as it's really terrible, and hate is cathartic, and we should do this. But then I thought, too many people know this, and I thought, you know what, there's an even worse dinosaur fighting game in existence. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you the shit nut that is Dino-Rex. Dino-Rex is horrendous. It's a total mess of rancid presentation, woeful controls, and gameplay that stinks like a month-old horse carcass taking a little dip in a septic tank. Dino-Rex was released by Taito in 1992, and during that 12-month period, of course, both Jurassic Park and Street Fighter 2 came out, and they thought, here's a money spinner. Unfortunately, it forgot that both of those things are very, very good. Dino-Rex isn't very good. Dino-Rex is really bad. Straight from the off, we're treated to a tour de force of diuretic juice sprayed directly into our eyes by a grammatically broken anal fissure of a storyline during the attract sequence. It reads like a 14-year-old special needs boy's creationist meandering, as slaves battle each other for the right to make whoopee with an Amazonian princess by cockfighting with bloody dinosaurs. And these dinosaurs look terrible. These two-tone photorealistic Harryhausen rejects waddle around with less frames of animation than one of those fat people who have to have their bedroom wall demolished to move them. You feel sorry for those people. So do I. But don't feel sorry for Dino-Rex. It's shit, and it knows it is, as the football chant goes. It forgets the leaps forward in one-on-one beat-em-up gameplay made by Street Fighter 2 just a year before by replacing the fast-paced strategic precision of Capcom's effort with lardy lumbering lizards slowly and awkwardly shifting their fat, scaly rumps in an ungainly fashion, occasionally making contact with a narcoleptic collision detection, can be bothered to peek out from under its duvet cover. At times, Dino-Rex tries, it really does. There's a natty series of bonus stages that actually play marginally better than the main game, because everyone in the Taito building was clearly drunk the day they made this. Your dino avatar is hurtled into the far future, where he battles present-day mankind and all that modern weaponry with his whirly-gig helicopters and machine guns, giving Godzilla a good old wink and an Allosaurus-sized thumbs-up in the process. Unfortunately, it still handles like hot garbage, but at least it's a different coloured turd to roll round in for once. And make no mistake about it, it truly is a pile of dino turd. Please don't ever play this. If you hate yourself that much, there is probably a bottle of Domestos under your sink right now. Get that down here. The intense fire of your melting insides is infinitely more preferable than playing even a single round of this tumorous Triceratops testy. Avoid like an apocalyptic meteor. Half a cigarette burn out of five is being generous. Goodbye, everyone. Goodbye. You wanna milk it and you know.
Last week, Boo told you all about his love of zombies, and unfortunately, he's an idiot. Explain why.
Thanks for that lovely intro, Dave. it's a small thing. My brain wasn't in gear. We recorded that when we were just shooting the shit. We were just chatting away. I didn't know it was being recorded. When I was talking about De La Morte, De La Mort, I mentioned the fact that it was one of Brendan Fraser's earliest films. Well, it's not. And I knew it's not. It wasn't either. I don't know why I said Brendan Fraser. The correct actor was Rupert Everett, Madonna's mate. So I just want to apologise for the mistake. And thank you to all you lovely milksters who pulled me up on it. I really appreciate being told that I'm crap at what I do. Last week saw the finale of fan-favourite TV show Futurama, another show taken away in its prime. Join me as I present a timeline of the fantastic animated show Futurama.
Milking It presents Boo's Big Old Timeline of Futurama.
In the late 1990s, while working on hit show The Simpsons, creator Matt Groening envisions a show set in the future about a boy from the past. March 28th, 1999, episode 1 of Futurama airs, entitled Space Pilot 3000. It introduces us to Philip J. Fry, a pizza delivery boy lost in time. Nephew of Professor Hubert Farnsworth, owner of the Planet Express Delivery Company. Bender, his robot friend, adept in drinking, gambling, smoking, and of course the cool crime of stealing. We meet Taronga Leela, Cyclops, Mutant, and love interest of Philip J. Fry. We meet Amy Wong, Hermes Conrad, and the lovable Dr. Zoidberg. Boasting a stellar cast, including Katie Siegel, Billy West, John DiMaggio, Tress MacNeille, Maurice LaMarche, and Phil Lamar. For four seasons, we watched as Philip J. Fry and the crew went around the galaxy and back again, boasting wacky inventions, crazy concepts, time travel, and every other bit of sci-fi cliche. They made it their own. And then, after four stellar seasons, it happened. With Fox withdrawing funding and episodes becoming sporadic and hard to find, by the end of 2004, Futurama had ceased production and was as dead as a satisfied suicide booth customer. Fast forward to 2005. Comedy Central acquired the rights to Futurama. During the negotiations for the rights, Comedy Central discussed the possibility of producing new episodes. Then, in 2006, it was announced that four straight-to-DVD films would be produced and later split into episodes. The final movie release, Into the Green Yonder, was designed to stand as the Futurama season finale. However, Matt Groening expressed a desire to continue the franchise in any form he could, including a theatrical movie. After the release of the last straight-to-DVD film, it seemed that Futurama had been taken from us once again. In 2009, Fox announced that Comedy Central had greenlighted 26 new half-hour episodes. June 24th, 2010. The returning show gives the network its highest-rated night for that entire year, proving that not only had Futurama been missed, but it was a hit. In fact, it had proved such a hit that in March 2011, Comedy Central announced that they would be making a Season 7. And sadly, all good things must come to an end. And on April 2013, it was announced that Futurama would be coming to an end. Again. But there is some good news, everyone!
And that was Boo's retrospective on Futurama. And now we're going to discuss it because, as he said, it's one of the biggest and best. And it came back from the dead. It's a zombie cartoon, ladies and gentlemen. So it's come back and now, sadly, it's gone. Boo, over to you.
No, Dave, I mean, the last episode was fantastic. It really did fit in well with the series. And, I mean, it had a time travel. This is not a spoiler-free show. In the show, Fry and Leela, Fry asks Leela to marry him. The Professor Farnsworth invents a machine that lets somebody go back in time by 10 seconds.
Right.
And basically it ends with the machine being destroyed and Fry and Leela being the only people existing in time. Everyone else is frozen, and they spend the rest of their life traveling around the world, walking across the oceans, and just the imagery was beautiful. And it had a very satisfying ending as well, because it kind of made it all come circle, if you see what I mean. I mean, the show has been hugely successful, hugely popular. I did ask a couple of people on the Old Milking It podcast Facebook fan group, that's www.facebook.com/milkingit, on their favourite episodes. Tad Trussell, The Beast with the Billion Backs, was a particular favourite. This was the third film that they'd come back during their second regeneration, as it were. Decent episode. Not my personal favourite. We had young Johnny Bailey. He chose Where the Bugalos Roam from season 4, which was, it was a really cool concept. It was about the rich Wong family on Mars, and they've taken the land from the native Martians, kind of like the Americans taking the land off the Native Americans, but very clever. My personal favourite episode of Futurama was Fry and the Slurm Factory from season 1. I just don't think there has been as good, and it's a brilliant series, but I think that was still the best episode completely. So thank you for those couple of opinions, boys. I have to mention the episode Jurassic Bark from series 4. Again, I did mention it just now in the timeline. Not a dry eye in the house, and it has been voted one of the saddest moments on television ever. It was actually based, just in case you haven't seen it, Dave, because I know you catch various episodes, but you've not kind of sat and watched.
I mean, we were chit-chatting earlier before we started recording, and I'm the kind of person who has seen one or two episodes, because it was always on before The Simpsons and stuff on Sky One back in the day. And I probably know a couple of episodes if you chatted about them. I know the one that was like a piss take of the Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. And I know the one where Bender became a wrestler and that kind of stuff. But I was never a massive fan. It never really captured my imagination as much as The Simpsons did.
I this was another debate that was going around. The general consensus is that Futurama is better than The Simpsons, but I don't know whether that's fans saying it because they're going to miss it so much. But the point I was going to make was this particular episode, this devastatingly heartbreaking episode, Jurassic Park, I actually found out that it's based on a true story. If you can, again, for those who haven't seen the episode, Fry finds the fossil of his dog. He's going to bring it back to life, and at the last minute, he decides against it. You're then shown the end of his dog's life. His dog waited for him forever until the dog passed away. And the show ends with Fry's dog closing its eyes and going to sleep under the snow. Even now.
No, seriously.
Even now. But I can make it a million times worse for everybody. It's based on a true story. It was based on a dog called Hachiko in Japan, and it was an Akita, and it would wait for his master to come home from work. It would walk to the metro station or the tube station, I'm not sure what they call it in Japan, with his owner, and then he would wait there for his owner to come back. Well, his owner had a brain aneurysm at work, so of course he never came back. And Hachiko waited for his owner for 10 years until he passed away. And there's all kinds of idols and altars to the dog now. And I mean, it's an amazing thing to base an episode on, and so brave of them, because even now it's still talked about. And one last thing about Futurama that I had to share is, you know, every now and then you find out a little random fact that is just really interesting. The character of Nibbler, the Nibblonium,
yes,
he's voiced by Frank Welker, a.k.a. Megatron from the original Transformers series.
That is a perfect Milking It fact.
There we go. Things you learned today, ladies and gentlemen, from the Milking It crew. But yes, Futurama will be missed. It was an awesome, awesome show. And, it's been brought back 3 times. I really don't see it coming back again. Third time's the charm. So, again, thank you to Matt Groening and everyone that made it, because it's very important to me. Just before we get off the subject, I just want to say why it's so important to me. This is a little bit kind of self-indulgent, but I was introduced to Futurama by my friend Travis, who unfortunately passed away 2005. It was something that we shared together. He went off to work for Marvel. Unfortunately, he had a heart attack, age 26. I mean, it's very sad, but he introduced me to Futurama, and Futurama for me always holds a special place because Travis introduced it to me, and we used to laugh and laugh and laugh, and it's one of my enduring memories of a good friend is our love of Futurama. So it will never die in my mind because I'll always have a special place for it. So thank you, Futurama.
Hey, you want to spend some money, then get on board and check these guys out. And...
Dave, is something burning?
Yep, certainly is, Boo. Decided to destroy my walking beds.
Workloads, the early editions of Workloads, what are you doing, man?
No, Robert Kirkman means nothing to me now, my friend.
What?
Yep, that's it.
Wait, what are you burning? What is that you're putting on there?
That's a Batman Incorporated. It's Grant Morrison. Don't worry about it. It's fine. Don't worry.
Why are you doing this, Dave?
That's what, literally, trust me. This is the warmest I've ever been in my entire f***ing life. Hang on a second. Just pass me that Alan Moore Watchman. Yeah, issue one. Yeah. Come on.
Don't do that, Dave. Alan Moore will come for us.
There we go. It's fine. Seriously, man. I have completely gone down the wrong path, my friend, because I didn't realise that my life was based upon the idea that comic books were cool. But yes, they are cool, Boo. And you know what's cool? 8oclockcomics.com. Because all these other comic books, honestly, I have been wiping my arse with pages from The Killing Joke. Because
so that's what was in my comic.
Yes! I have literally been scraping the shit from inside the curvaceous moments of my asshole with pages from that comic book because I am a massive fan of 8 o'clock comics. I've seen what they do and compared it to what I was into and, I've seen the light, Boo. I've seen the light!
You know what, Dave? After reading The Devil Dolls, I think you're right. 8oclockcomics.com is definitely the way to go.
Anyone who's followed us on Facebook would have seen the absolutely, in my opinion, brilliant trailer for the new RoboCop movie has been posted up there. And there was a little bit of discussion backwards and forwards as to whether it was a good thing or a bad thing. So that started us thinking generally about reboots. Boo, your thoughts on RoboCop?
I saw the trailer two times yesterday. I watched it when it was first put up on the Milkinet Facebook group, and then waited for my housemate to get home to show him. I actually don't get mad, people. Don't get mad. I thought it was an awesome looking trailer. I thought the cast looked good. I thought the design looked good. I liked the new military feel of the whole thing. I really can't wait to see RoboCop, and I'm really praying that this isn't another situation where I see a trailer like, say, Total Recall, the recent one, and the film's disappointing. But I know it's not going to be out and out gory and violent like the last one, but I don't know if that's necessary anymore because, you know, 80s films, you had Rambo and ultra violence in, you know, Running Man, Arnie, all these kind of violent movies. That's not the way Hollywood makes money anymore. So I think they've done the best that they can with the product, and I'm really looking forward to seeing the remake of RoboCop.
I think for me, when I was watching the trailer, was that I could see in my head, and obviously without giving away my secret identity, I could see the game that was going to come out of that. The whole thing seemed to me, you know, the first one was very 80s. It was all about commercialism. It was all about that sort of dystopian universe. I'd buy that for a dollar, etc.
Damn it, you beat me to the dollar.
There we go. Damn it. Yeah. And so that was all about that. Now you watch the trailer, and it's very much more like we've created this guy and he's in a human computer game, and it was literally like watching a level, you know, and you could see right, this is going to be the 360 game that you can buy and, you know, or download or whatever. But for me, I'm excited about it. I think it'd be quite good. I mean, I the first one, the original rather, which was obviously the best, it got quite geeky when she got past, and not geeky in a good way, Milking It fans. It got quite bad when you got past sort of RoboCop 2 and everything else.
I chose to ignore RoboCop 3 and the TV series. I was actually discussing RoboCop earlier, and there's a scene in RoboCop 2 that I don't think I should have seen at the age I was at, because to this day it still kind of makes me remember how turned my stomach was. There's a scene in RoboCop 2, the little boy's one of the baddies, they cover his eyes just before they torture, I think he's a dirty cop, and they perform open stomach surgery on him without any anaesthetic. They carve him straight down the middle. I was very little. I don't think I was allowed to watch it, but I caught it, and that really stayed with me. So, fun and games in the RoboCop films.
And then a few years later, he was bending the bars and rescuing Sting.
Not me. He means RoboCop.
Yes. Sorry. Yeah, Boo has never rescued Sting.
Not the wrestler.
No. There was that time the mic went out during the Police's gig in Hyde Park that I remember you running on stage and helping him out. But
I was the guy with the big plate in my lip.
With the table tennis bat in his lip. Yeah, I remember him. I remember him on Wogan in the 80s. Wow, look at this, Milky fans. We're going back to the 80s.
Hey, whoa, this is a geek show, not a nostalgia show.
Yeah, true. But saying that, that led us on from, you know, okay, so RoboCop, we're cautiously optimistic. I think that's the way that we'd look at it.
Dave, I've got a huge list of reboots and remakes, and I just want to chuck a couple of titles in your general direction and just tell me yay or nay.
Boom, chuck them all over my face.
So from my list of reboots coming up, we've done RoboCop, The Crow.
Whoa, what?
It was announced, I believe, that Tom... Hoddle, I'm going to look terrible now. The guy that played Loki.
You'll always look terrible, but you'll sound worse because it's a podcast. But go on.
Yeah, I'm not on it at the moment. Let's just stick with the facts. The Crow remake was announced a couple of weeks ago. I think the guy that played Loki, is it Tom Middleston Hoddleston?
Yes, yeah, I believe he was previously in a store that sells entertainment product that I might have worked in London town one time.
He did the Crow makeup, and I think he was approached about it. I don't think they're going through with it. But is this generation ready for The Crow? Or because that was, you got to remember, that was the grunge generation. We are now in the dubstep generation, or what I like to call the abominable music generation.
Wow, you're sounding old, man.
I know, but come on, Milksters,
lift it up. the Crow was helped out by the fact that he died. In exactly the same way that Heath Ledger's Joker is now regarded as amazing. You might have heard episode 2, kids. You'll know some people didn't enjoy that. But some people, me, actually did enjoy that. And it was lifted by the fact that he died. He became this cult thing, this absolute iconic character. That was the same with Brandon Lee. When Brandon Lee died making The Crow, that was the thing that came out of it. Yes, we had to CGI the ending. We had to CGI this character running across the rooftops because stuntman stood in for him. But that was the thing that carried that movie. And I remember watching that film at the time, and yeah, it was quite dark and it was quite difficult to watch and everything else, but I'm right in saying that The Crow was a comic book movie, right?
It was a comic book movie. It was J.R. Barr's book. I think he wrote it to help him get over the death of his wife. But I think to make a Crow movie for the Twilight generation, it's going to lose a lot of its power. I don't know whether they'll stick with the source material. Again, this is all hearsay, because until we see trailers or a bit more information, we're not going to know anything. But I don't think this generation will appreciate another Crow movie.
But I think The Crow for me was a film that lived on better in terms of still pictures from it than it did as a film itself. So the iconic... The crow in the petrol burning and that kind of stuff was really good. Obviously, Batman did that later when he did it on the side of the fucking building.
Yeah, Devil did it as well. They've all done it, Dave. I'm sure I've left a little BL in some grass somewhere.
Well, haven't we all, dear? But for me, The Crow does not need to be remade. Next one, Boo. Next one.
Flight of the Navigator.
No! What?
Flight of the Navigator is apparently up for a remake.
You're ripping out the heart of this 80s boy, my friend.
Dave, allow me to hurt you even more. Here is a list of 80s remakes and reboots that I've compiled, just a little list that I've read today.
Okay, but Flight of the Navigator had Sarah Jessica Parker in it, if I'm not mistaken.
It did. In fact, it was the last time she was attractive.
Oh, come on, man. You'll never be Mr. Big. How many girls have said that to you?
just the nun.
you fucking nun?
I'm not that lonely, Milksters. I promise you. I have a life outside of this booth. But yes, Flight of the Navigator is getting remade, along with Escape from New York. Ouch.
What?
Wait, it gets worse. Gremlins.
No, they can't remake.
And there's a rumor that they'll CGI the Gremlins.
Yeah, well, of course.
Yes. Highlander.
Yeah, I can see that. There's only so many times you can watch the Fabulous Freebirds in Madison Square Gardens at the beginning.
You're
of that.
You gotta love it, kid. War Games.
Yeah, I can see that. Matthew Broderick's not his greatest film, but yeah, it was a good film at the time.
We've got Weird Science being remade.
Yeah, I've got that on my list as well, my friend, because we prepare.
We just pro. and Poltergeist as well. And the weirdest one, which of all the films that don't need to be remade, The Toxic Avenger might very well be one of my top. In fact, I'm hoping to do a little segment on trauma movies soon. I'm a big fan of trauma movies and the House of Lloyd Kaufman.
Yeah.
And I think they're talking about doing a big budget Toxic Avenger, which kind of destroys the object of a trauma film, in my opinion. But again, we're not going to touch on trauma yet, but yeah, the Toxic Avenger remake is happening.
All I'll say is that Toxic Avenger obviously had a TV series in terms of a Saturday morning cartoon.
The Toxic Crusaders, yes, Dave.
Yeah, they're gross, but they still get girls. I believe was the tagline.
Well, that's what I've got tattooed on my back, Fat.
Your tramp stamp is trauma.
And it's not just the 80s movies that are getting remade, Dave. Today I've learned that they're making a new version of Starship Troopers that is toned down so that it's more accessible for... Not children.
Could they not tone it down? Could they just turn it off? Because I fucking hated that film.
Whoa, controversial. I love Starship Troopers. The first one was absolutely fantastic. In fact, have you noticed that a lot of these films suffer from what I like to call great first film, shit sequels? We talked about RoboCop, Lethal Weapon's got a remake coming up, The Crow. All of these films had terrible, terrible sequels. And talking of terrible sequels, Michael Bay's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I mean, technically a reboot. Have you seen any of the pictures from the set, Dave? They're doing CGI, blah, blah, blah.
This is, for me, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles sort of came at that, because of the age I am, it came at that point when I was just slightly too old to be buying figures and stuff. Now I'm the age where I've started buying figures again. But at the time, it was the Saturday morning cartoon. I remember the Teenage Mutant Hero Turtles.
Turtles.
Completely. Heroes in a Half Shell.
Turtle Power. Yeah, we can just do that.
They debuted on the 8:15 from Manchester, which was a Saturday morning TV show on BBC One. And I remember getting quite excited and there was going to be this film. And I remember the Partners in Crime, T-U-R-T-L-E, Power. I remember buying that on a cassette single. And that was one of the first things I bought. So it was a big deal, but only because it was a manufactured big deal. And looking back on it now, I was just totally suckered into being a Turtle fan and everything else. I remember reading all these things about, Kevin Eastman and, so they created it. Oh, they drew it on the back of a napkin and now it's worth $25 million. And it just seems to be one of those things where it's a decent idea and it's quite a cute thing that, it's these turtles and they know ninja and shit. And
they eat pizza, they don't ninja.
Precisely. But for me, it's not something that they should constantly keep trying to reboot.
Sorry to interrupt you. They actually ended the series in the most perfect way possible. There was an animated film called Turtles Forever. Mm. If you haven't seen Turtles Forever, it's an animated show where the turtles from modern day cartoons cross over with the original 90s cartoon turtles and they end up...
Do they end up in the snow waiting for Splinter to come home?
No, it better than that, Dave. They end up in the ultra-violent and adult comic book.
Wow.
Ninja Turtle world, and they have to kill Shredder once and for all, like the Shredder from the comic book, because he's evil, whereas the Shredder from the animated series in Krang of a Krang.
Yeah.
Rock steady.
Yes. Bebop and Rocksteady, who always reminded me of the Nasty Boys.
We're going to make toilet soup out of you. Like, and they did remind me of the Nasty Boys as well. Yeah, thank you. But but check out Turtles Forever, guys. If you get a chance, it was a perfect way to end Turtles. So Michael Bay is playing with my toys once again. I hate the Transformers series. I wish he'd leave it alone. Mm-hmm. I don't even think the arrival of
Did you see the Dinobots are in the next Transformers?
I did see the Dinobots, and they are my favourite thing in Transformers, and Grimlock's my favourite Transformer of all time because it was the only toy I could properly transform as a child, I think. But the last two were just terrible. I've seen all of them. I saw the first one a couple of times because it was one of the first Blu-rays I ever had. HD DVD, even worse. Damn.
Wow, HD DVD. Yeah, I was going to say, it was exclusive to HD DVD for quite a while. Because, whether it was, I can't remember if it was Paramount or Universal, they signed on to the wrong thing. They went the opposite way of porn when Betamax and VHS came out. Because Betamax came out and they went, no, we're not having anything to do with porn. We're not going to let people produce porn tapes on it. VHS went, yeah, come on, bring it on. Come all over our face. Let's do it. And that is why VHS succeeded, because the VHS is
a lost artifact in time, Dave. How we've got from Turtles Forever to Porno Forever, I've no idea. But,
okay, let's go back to reboots. So, go on.
And just the last couple of reboots and remakes I wanted to talk about. They're doing a reboot of Hitman Agent 47 based on the video game. Yeah. And as everybody knows, there is a Mortal Kombat reboot coming out, and the big one, Godzilla, is being rebooted again by the Americans. Keep Matthew Broderick away from it. Is that the second? It's the second mention this list. I did not like the American Godzilla film. The best thing to come out of that was the Jamiroquai soundtrack. Yeah, you just, oh man, I think I'd been spoiled.
The P. Diddy track from that mashed with Kashmir, that was good.
Yes. You want to hate me now?
Do you want to hate me now?
That one, yeah. It was... I hated it. And the problem was he had given us Independence Day, which I thought was brilliant. And this was like the follow-up. I think this was his first film after Independence Day, the Ronald Emmerich.
Yes, yeah.
And, yeah, massively disappointing because, A, you know, I was at that age where every summer blockbuster was the thing of the summer. This summer it's Men in Black. Next summer it's Godzilla. You know, the summer before that was Independence Day. The summer after that it's Mars Attacks. Like, I lived for the summer movies, and Godzilla was just a stinging pile of dino crap. So,
you see, for me, I enjoyed Godzilla, but only because it had Hank Azaria in it.
Another mention for the Hank Azaria. Brilliant voice actor and actor. Mm. You know. But
I think previously I'd only seen him in The Birdcage.
I do remember Le Cage en Folle.
Yeah.
Dave and I have a special affinity for that film. I love that film.
We certainly do, because it is a shadowing of our future, I think. But there we go. In terms of remakes and reboots and stuff, I had a little look online earlier on. I was looking through things. Obviously, there are successful ones, though. There are things like The Evil Dead. I don't know whether you've seen the Evil Dead that was released this year.
I got a bit fan uppity about that. I'll share this story with you quickly.
Yeah, yeah.
I am not a sexist Milking It fans at all, but when I heard that they'd replaced Ash with a female character, I was kind of pissed because following on from the zombie discussion last week, I was a big fan of Night of the Living Dead. Tom Savini, who was the makeup artist on those films, specifically Dawn and Day of the Dead, he directed a coloured remake of Night of the Living Dead, and they made Barbara, who was basically the first victim in the original, into the hero. I don't have a problem with women being being the hero. I mean, Sigourney Weaver, Ripley, one of the greatest action hero, in my opinion, one of the greatest characters in film history, with her every step of the way. And to replace Ash with a woman just did my head in. And again, it's not a sexist thing. For me, Evil Dead was all about not just Bruce Campbell, but the character of Ash. I mean, it was played by Bruce Campbell to a T that he made it his own. And I kind of got mad. The film's not too bad. all that rage. It's not actually that bad a horror film.
Right.
And there was a post-credit, which I'm not going to go into because I'm not that spoilery. But if you haven't seen it, there is a post-credit that kind of rounds everything off in a nice way. So,
Okay, so, but also, I would say not so successful in terms of reboots this year was The Lone Ranger, which was a multi-million dollar film, which was going to reboot this whole franchise, and we're going to have Lone Ranger, this, that, and that, and but just absolutely stiffed. So it not only does it question whether Johnny Depp is the person to carry things like that and in the long run, but you also wonder whether should you leave alone franchises that were so popular years and years and years ago, and you know, or are there ways to rejuvenate and make people think, yeah, actually, you know, this is the way forward, and yeah, I really enjoy this. But you know, for me, it was a shame because I love a good cowboy film, and I was really hoping that that would start the Western up again, and it would get, you know, people intrigued and enjoying Westerns.
But funny you mention Westerns, David. This isn't off point, but it kind of is. I read today, and it's something I should have read a long time ago. Read today that they are making a sequel to Black Dynamite,
yeah,
set in the Wild West as a kind of tribute to Blazing Saddles.
Excellent.
If you guys haven't seen Black Dynamite, get on it now, because it is a wonderful bit of blaxploitation parody. Michael J. White in the lead role. Fantastic movie. And I know I say fantastic a lot, but this film genuinely is a brilliant, brilliant film.
Excellent. Well, like I say, I was looking through this list, and one that caught my eye was Curse of Chucky.
Yes.
I believe it's a straight to DVD. I don't think it's getting a cinema release. But
it's not only straight to DVD, Dave, but they have taken away one of the most important elements of those films. I'm a huge horror film fan. And again, with the Gremlins, yeah, they've made the same mistake. In fact, it's out, I believe, Dave, Curse of Chucky.
Yes, yeah.
They have replaced the animatronic Chucky and, you know, real puppet model.
Yeah.
With the CGI. Doll.
Yeah. Oh, really? A doll, the whole thing is CGI.
No, just a doll.
I didn't think it was like fucking Toy Story.
Chucky in Up.
Woody wants to play. No.
Very good.
I presumed that it was all going to be... I've seen the fucking trailer. Yeah, Chucky's my best friend. No, right. Okay, so the doll, whenever it's on stage, fuck me, on screen is CGI.
Yes.
Wow. Okay, that's interesting.
That's for you.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to put a cross through that. I'm not watching that bullshit. okay. The other one that got me, there was a few that were listed. So there's a Carrie remake coming up.
It's the third Carrie remake?
Yeah, pretty much. So they've remade that many, many times. But is that just a case of someone looking at that and saying, it's a great film and it's one of the best horror films you could possibly... The original is absolutely haunting and beautiful in a very scary way. Is that someone looking at it and going, oh, well, yeah, well, we just need better special effects?
This is what I don't get. Who are these people that think they can improve these films? The ending of the original Carrie still haunts me to this day. One of the biggest, what are they called, like jump scares. There's probably a pair of soiled underpants somewhere out there still with a C in it from when I first saw that movie.
What a beautiful image.
Let it linger. But no, Carrie was brilliant, and I don't think a remake's going to do it any favours. And... oh man, why are we getting onto the kind of the sex argument here? Is Carrie in the original, she had such a vulnerability, and they keep on replacing Carrie with a bit of a sassy girl. You know what I mean? Like, oh, she's, you know, oh, she can, you can see that she can handle herself. She's a sassy girl. No, Carrie was abused by her mother mentally. She doesn't know how society works. Like this poor girl. Sissy Spacek.
Well done, yep.
Was fantastic. I got it out. Dave, I got it out for you.
Well done.
was brilliant in the role. And I don't think that needs remaking. If any Stephen King film needs remaking, and in fact, that was one of my remakes on my list I didn't mention, which
Pet
was
Sematary.
It. Pet Sematary was great. The guy that played Herman Munster was in it. What more do you want?
Yeah, fair dues.
The film that needs to be remade is Maximum Overdrive, because it's the only one that Stephen King directed, and he didn't do a terribly good job. And the premise was was there. There may even already be a remake, but I think it needs a proper Hollywood big deal remake. It's for those that don't know, Maximum Overdrive is a film about a meteorite flies over the planet Earth, and the radiation makes all machines come to life. So trucks come to life, toasters come to life, everything comes to life, and it's a group of human survivors holed up in a gas station / cafe, and every time one tries to escape, they're hit by a truck which has got the face of the Green Goblin, Spider-Man's nemesis. A gem to track down, not a brilliant film, and obviously made during the height of Stephen King's huge coke habit that he had back then, self-confessed. Yes, you know, no slander on this show. There are better films to remake than anything from Stephen King other than the one he messed up himself.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay, so literally a couple more and then we'll leave this subject and move on to bigger and better things. But I also saw on IMDb that I was looking at today was Dirty Dancing is due a remake.
Well, they did a sequel a few years, but don't ask me how I know this. They did a sequel a few years back with Havana Nights.
Yep. in fact, there was one after and then Havana. I don't know. Anyway,
I will be 100% honest now. I have never seen the original Dirty Dancing all the way through. However, the soundtrack
is amazing.
Is amazing.
I've always had
the Dirty Dancing soundtrack on my iPod or MP3 or whatever my Zune. But the film itself doesn't interest me at all. Obviously, Swayze was a decent guy. He made Roadhouse.
Completely with Terry Funk. So that's
with Terry Funk, indeed.
There we go. Bring it back to wrestling, ladies and gentlemen. The other one that caught my eye was obviously there's a new Jurassic Park on the way, Jurassic Park 4, which has had difficulty finding someone to direct it and everything else, which doesn't fill me with confidence. But you think that's obviously going to be very interesting. But the big one for me was the fact that Austin Powers 4. Surely that's got to be the greatest film of all time.
The thing is, Seth Green is so busy at the moment. Mike Myers, I don't know if he's funny anymore, Dave.
All right, I'm just going to cross that off the list.
Well, I mean, I've got two more before we move on.
I'll go for mine. Right, the other one that piqued my attention is one of my favorite films, and again, you tie something into a friend earlier on, and this is one of mine that ties into one of my best friends of all time. But one of the films that was listed as being remade, which should be out in 2014, was Drop Dead Fred.
Ah, okay, I didn't have that on my list. Okay, is this an American gimmick thing?
This is gonna be one of those moments where we probably divide our loyalties. But the guy who is rumored to be involved, Drop Dead Fred's remake, obviously Rick Mail in the original.
Dave, are you going to tell me Russell Brand?
Yeah.
Fuck.
Sorry, I'm a big fan. I would quite happily watch him play that part. That's perfect for him.
Really?
Yeah, but Rick Mail was so good.
But Rick Mail and Russell Brand are two very different creatures, in my opinion. The only way this could work is with another wacky comedian. Personally, who's a decent new wacky comedian? Jimmy Fallon. If we were going to use an American, I'd go with Jimmy.
Yeah, fair deuce. Yeah.
He's done for that gangly, comedic look. If we were going to go British.
If we're going to go British, I would go for my boy Paul Foote.
I'm trying to think. Maybe Russell Brand is a good. Maybe there isn't another comedian out there at the moment who was as out there as Rick Mayer was back then.
That's what I'm saying. He's a perfect kind of,
I don't have a problem. I don't have a problem with Russell Brand. In fact, I remember a long time ago. In fact, Dave, you helped reignite my love of Saturday Night Live about 4 years ago when you sent me a sketch that Russell Brand had done for them called "Don't Go Running Around to Roro."
Yeah.
And I watched it and I went, YouTube. All right. And, YouTube people, Russell Brand, SNL. But yeah, like I do like Russell Brand, and because, as I said, that reignited my love of SNL, which to this day I still hold. So I need to thank you for that. I don't think I ever did, but yeah, that just like Justin Timberlake, Russell Brand earned my appreciation through Saturday Night Live. Drop Dead Fred might work with him. I think maybe you need a wackier type of comedian. Maybe Jim Carrey in his prime.
What?
Decent American.
Yeah, in his prime, yes, yeah. Not now.
Oh, not Mr. Jim Carrey. Oh, I don't advocate the violence and the multi-million dollar film.
Yeah, I'm so sorry. I've just been paid this massive amount of money to be in a film. I don't really agree with it. Yeah, go fuck yourself.
Shall I do promotion? No? Alrighty then. but yeah, I think I've dropped Dead Fred. Reboot could potentially work, but again, I think Rick Mayall made that his movie. Was it Kate Phoebes or Phoebes Kate or whatever her name was?
Who was in Gremlins? There we go. We've gone full circle.
And just like people running out of time, Dave, they're remaking Logan's Run, which I think is a decent enough movie to remake. How they're going to remake it this day and age, I don't know. They made it work with Planet of the Apes, for God's sake. They're going to make it work with Logan's Run.
Indeed. So there you go, Milksters. That's what you've got to look forward to coming up in the future. So we said on Facebook, as you've no doubt seen, that we're going to present our top five. This is the moment where wrestling fans rejoice. Non-wrestling fans, stick around. Honestly, these are the things that if you look up on YouTube, you can enjoy. And this is the reason you should be watching professional wrestling. So what we decided to do, because we know this is going to go a little bit long, is Bowie's going to do his top five today. I'm going to do my top five next week and our justifications and ramifications as we chit chat about it. But it's mostly going to be Boo, because Boo is presenting his top five wrestling matches of all time.
Right, now, this list is not the best five matches that have ever taken place ever. This is my personal top five matches that I've seen when I was a wrestling fan, and hopefully you might not have seen some of these. You'll go and track them down and enjoy them as much as I did. The first was a match presented at the Survivor Series 1995. Wow. On a stacked card, one match that came out of nowhere stole the entire show. And that was the women's Survivor Series match featuring Bertha Faye, Aja Khan, Watanabe, Lioness Asuka versus Alundra Blaze, Inu, Hasegawa, and Asari. They were busting out moves that I still haven't seen other people do. They did a Sky Twister press, which, I mean, back then, the biggest move off the top rope was a splash. You basically had the moonsault just about, because Muta had just brought it over to WCW. But there was no real high flying, so to see a Sky Twister press, which is a kind of like a corkscrew moonsault, performed at a WWF, and was, as it was known then, show, was just something else. Just all the girls, they were given fuck all time. They were given so little time, and it's just such a shame, because in that small amount of time, they were able to make a real impression on me and everyone else that saw that pay-per-view. So the women, in my opinion, that was the match of Survivor Series 1995. I'm going to start with the more obscure, because I'm going to get into the better well-known ones. One I've really got to give props to is Eddie Guerrero and Art Barr at Los Gringos Locos versus Eugenio Del Santo and Octagon. This was at the AAA When Worlds Collide pay-per-view from 1994. To this day, I have never seen a crowd get so just wound up and excited and down and then up and then down. I mean, the Guerrero and Art Barr were the ultimate heels. There was an American and a Mexican playing an American against Mexico, right, in a Mexican promotion. El Hideo Del Santo, the son of Santos. Santos was like a god out there. He was bigger than Hogan.
Yeah.
So, you know, to have him out there and Octagon, it was a 2 out of 3 falls match. It was also a mask versus hair match, so it was stipulated up to the balls. They even did the Terry Funk spot, which is what I call the Terry Funk spot, where pile drivers are illegal in Mexico. Eddie hits El Hideo Del Santo with a tombstone pile driver. Now, that means nothing in American wrestling. In Mexican wrestling, that means that they have just killed somebody, yeah. And I think it's actually against the law, like legit, wow. Legit. Yeah, when I saw that match, I tag team wrestling was never the same for me after that. I was used to like Demolition versus, you know, the Power and Glory and the
Brothers,
Bulldogs,
yes.
And dare I say it, the American Males. American Males, YouTube, WCW, ladies and gentlemen, worst wrestling theme ever.
Yeah. But
no, this tag team match was, I mean, in a card that they had the young Rey Mysterio, it had just so much going for it. It had a steel cage main event. It was one of the, it's been voted like one of the greatest pay-per-views ever. It was also the first pay-per-view that Mike Tenay ever commentated on.
Yes.
So it's worth tracking down. That was when Worlds Collide by AAA, and that was in 1994. My next selection is going to be a bit of a weird one, and believe me, if you've seen the match, you'd understand what I mean. This match took place in the year 2000. It's WWE's Backlash pay-per-view. It was for the light heavyweight title, and it was the Master of the Worms, Scotty Too Hotty from Too Cool, versus Dean Malenko, the Man of a Thousand Holds, the James Bond of the WWF. Just this match, from start to finish, was a technical storytelling masterclass that ended in a move that you just don't see ever. It was a back and forth battle. The story was they were working on Dean was working on Scotty's leg. The whole match, the finish just came out of nowhere and blew me away. And it just showed me that there was so much more than your average match in WWE, where it would just be two guys wrestling and one hits the finisher and it's over. I know that's not how it was, but back then in the year 2000, it was very Attitude Era. That was the way it was going. The match ended with a top rope DDT when Dean countered a superplex attempt by Scotty into a DDT. And I mean, a DDT. Yeah. It was stunning.
Brutal. Yeah.
And I remember the fact that I remember it this much. What was the main event of Backlash? I can't even remember what the main event was. I'm sure it was Rock versus someone. It was probably Rock Triple H again. But I remember this match, and that's why it stuck in my head. Because my list has been very WWF/eccentric, I thought I'd go hardcore with the next one. This match was one of the first ECW matches I ever saw, and it blew me away. They were doing stuff you know, I was not used to as a fan of WWE. Mm. This match was the Jerry Lynn versus RVD for the television title. The first one at Living Dangerously, I think.
Amazing.
It was. Everything about the match, it had emotion. It had the cocky guy versus the guy who deserved to win. Jerry, just to go off on a tangent just quickly, Jerry Lynn was one of the first people I ever met in the wrestling business. Mm. I went in as a fan, asked him, you know, what does it take to become a professional wrestler? I'd spent all my money on the ticket to get there because I just wanted to meet Jerry Lynn. He was charging for autographs, and I got in the queue, I got to the front, I said, I'm sorry I spent all my money getting here. I just wanted to shake your hand and just say thank you for everything. Mm. You know, like a good fan does.
Yeah,
I was like, I don't care if you don't have any money. Signed all my stuff, you know, to me, shook my hand, had my picture taken, and he was just a gent. If he had been a cock,
he would not be on that list.
I don't think I would have gone into professional wrestling. So he either did the world a favor or he did them a great injustice. Thank you, Jerry Lynn, for showing me that wrestlers are, you know, decent people. They're not people to be afraid of, when, you know, to approach as long as they're in the right mindset. The RVD versus Jerry Lynn match for the television title had me guessing all the way through because I didn't know the result. It could have been either man, and I love being worked like that. I love when a match, it takes me out of my comfort zone so much that I've start believing again. Even though I know. Before I mention my last, I know I've only got one. I'm going to mention two matches. A few years ago, there was a wrestler who was a world-class performer and one of the greatest of all time. Mm. Unfortunately, the way his life ended kind of erased everything that came before. But this is the Milking It podcast. Although this is by no means a justification, I am going to celebrate just very briefly a couple of matches by Chris Benoit. And Chris was, at that point, one of the top performers in the world. He was an inspiration. And it is, I don't want to say a shame. It is a shame what happened, but it's worse than a shame. But that's all another, you know, maybe that's another milk in it discussion. It's a bit close to the bone. But that we're not going to talk about what happened tonight. We're going to talk about what was. And what was an amazing wrestler. One of the first ones I want to mention is Benoit versus William Regal. This is the Brian Pillman Memorial Show. This is a match that people tell wrestling students to study to show how to control a match and how to, you know, how to really build something up, because the match itself is, it's like a thriller. It builds up really slowly but surely at its own pace and has that thrilling finish and just pops. It was a technical masterclass. And I know that word gets thrown out a lot, but it literally was a technical masterclass. You wanted stiff strikes, it had stiff strikes. You wanted submissions, it had submissions. It had everything. It had everything going for it. And it was an unforgettable match. And just a little bit of trivia. After that match, WWE was so impressed, they actually put that match on Velocity. Not the same match at the Brian Pillman Memorial Show, but they put on Regal versus Benoit. And apparently this match was just as good. I'm actually going to check out tonight because I only found out while doing a bit of investigation. But that was Regal Benoit at the Brian Pillman Memorial Show. The last one I'm going to touch on was, for me, that year's match of the year. And it was also the first main event of the year. That was the Royal Rumble 2003, Angle versus Benoit. The last match, I may have described it as a technical masterclass. This was the technical graduation ceremony. It was just so close, just near falls and just sweet, beautiful transitions of submission moves into other submission moves with a finishing sequence that would make your eyes water, and genuinely the most believable finish to an Angle match I've seen, because Angle knew that Benoit was just a little bit above some of the other guys that he'd worked and wrestled with technically. So the end is something beautiful to behold. And that was Angle versus Benoit at the Royal Rumble 2003. And that was for the WWE Championship. So there's just a few smatterings of American and Mexican classics from my vault. But please let me know what you think on the Milking It Facebook group. That's facebook.com/milkingit. Or you can follow us on Twitter at Teat Tugger, and you can agree with me, you can disagree with me, you can even curse me for mentioning the B word. Dave, I'm really looking forward to hearing all about your favourite matches next week, because I know that you've some quality wrestling, my friend, and I also believe you once managed one of the, shall we say, lesser British wrestlers on the scene at the time.
Well, I don't say lesser. I say he was unfortunately not seen by as many people as he should have been. So
that's beautiful.
That's the way I look at it.
Oh, that's the way I'm going to look at it now and tell people it was my own opinion. But no, I'm really looking forward to your list, Dave. And guys, don't stop sending us those top five wrestling matches, because they will get a mention on future Milking It podcasts.
You wanna milk it and you know. You gotta milk it and you know.